First of all, I wanted to open with Divrei Hakar Tato, with words of gratitude. As we mentioned last week, just wanted to thank Rabbi Luban, the Mor da'Asra of OT, for having me. It's a big schus, a big privilege to have a relationship with him and to be privy to all the, as I mentioned last week, the chesed that he does and the and his humility and his presence in the community. Also, special thanks to Rabbi Malitsky, a good friend and colleague. Rabbi Malitsky, in addition to just getting things done, to contributing to this community in such a large way, from shiurim to different initiatives, scholars in residence, all sorts of things. Also, he's a great source of insight and wisdom. I've sought your counsel many times, and you've delivered. You've been a big help, and I appreciate our relationship. And I appreciate thank you for having me and for asking me to give the shiurim. Our shiur tonight is sponsored by a friend, a good friend, Chaim Stricker. In memory of his grandfather, Meir Yaakov Stricker, whose yahrzeit is tonight, so our learning should be in his memory, and it's a big schut, a big privilege to be sponsoring the shiur, that you're sponsoring the shiur in his memory. Also, I wanted to dedicate the shiur to Ori Batar of Gadi Venoa Ansbacher. Ori Zichrona Livracha was not only a part of Klal Yisrael and a fellow Jew, a fellow sister. But also a student of one of our moras at Netivot. One of our moras taught her for 5 years, and was her co-teach and was the co-teacher of her mother in Tekoa. So it was a big loss for Klal Yisrael. And I just wanted to say a few words about her. So Ori was known as a creative, was known as a creative and expressive woman, young woman with words. She liked to write. She was very introspective. She looked at things on a more interior and deeper level. She had refined character. She was perceptive. She always tried to bring people together, always trying to bring her family together. Maranama mentioned that in all the years she taught her, and she taught her math and science, there was never a lack of respect. There was never any lack in her midot. So this is in her memory, Hashem Yikom Dama. So with that, we'll jump in. So last week we dedicated the shiur to my father-in-law, Rabbi Batzal Naor. So I'll again thank him for all the wisdom that he's imparted me with, and continues to do so, and acknowledge his daughter, my sister-in-law Ilana, who's here again. Thank you for coming, and to also again to acknowledge Rabbi David Aaron. A lot of the Torah that we're going to learn tonight, I learned from Rabbi David Aaron, from a Rebbe of mine, a mentor of mine, and a book of his that, you know what, I don't have it with me, but it's called The Secret Life of God. That has opened up a lot of world for me and for many others. Basically, his books, especially Secret Life of God, is based on the worldview and the Torah of Rav Kook, although he doesn't quote Rav Kook in that book explicitly, and it's life-changing. So I definitely recommend the book called The Secret Life of God. He has many other books as well that are also very powerful books. So Rav Kook. So we're going to give a little bit of a biographical context. Rav Kook, as we've said last time, was a scholar. He was a poet. He was a Talmudist. He was a halachist. He was a Kabbalist. He was a Hasidic master. He was a modern scholar. He was a revolutionary, an innovator. He was basically everything you could think of. Any word describing an expertise in the world, he did and he accomplished. And he was known as the Griva Eloi at a very young age. He was born in 1865. We mentioned last week that he was born to parents. One was a Litvak and one was a Chassid. Someone asked him, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And he said, "Both. I'm gonna bring both worlds together." And that's exactly what he did. And he was known when he was in Volozhin. He was learning. Supposedly, he was learning about 60 blot a day, 60 pages a day of Gemara. He was known as a super genius. But as we also mentioned, first and foremost, or what was most salient, was his dvekut, was his bonding with Hashem, his deep connection to Hashem. And that led him to delve into the deep sea of the Kabbalah. And in fact, at a very young age, it was very apparent that he was versed in Kabbalah. When he took on his first rabbinic post, a little bit after his wife passed away and he remarried, So he was in Boisk, he was in Zoymel, and during those years, I think in his early 20s, he studied with Rav Shlomo Elyashiv. Rav Shlomo Elyashiv was the grandfather of Rav Elyashiv Zatzal, of one of the Gdolei Yisrael, who passed away years ago. And Rav Shlomo Elyashiv was known as one of the great Mekubalim, one of the great Kabbalists of the 20th century and the turn of the 21st century, and the 19th and 20th centuries. And the Leshem, actually, there's someone who's writing a book on him right now. His sefer, the Leshem Shebo V'Achlama, is a classic Lithuanian Kabbalistic work, which is basically a commentary on the Arizal. Rav Kook learned with him for many hours on a weekly basis. And although there are similarities, and again, I'm not an expert in these topics, but there are similarities of Rav Kook's Kabbalah to the Leshem's, there are also major differences. So that was part of his spiritual and Kabbalistic background, and really he was very immersed in Kabbalah at the time. And then in addition to Kabbalah, he continued learning Kabbalah. He started publishing works of Kabbalah. For example, Reish Milin is a work on the... It's a Kabbalistic treatise on the letters and the Nikud of Hebrew, of the Otiot. So he goes deep into the Kabbalistic implications of letters of Hebrew. I have not looked at that sefer. There's someone actually, Rabbi Joey Rosenfeld, who has given a series of shiurim on this book, and it's available online. And he continues, Rav Kook continues to start publishing in Kabbalah and works that kind of synthesize all worlds of Jewish thought. And then I want to emphasize his Hasidic influences. So I asked my father-in-law recently, what were Rav Kook's particular Hasidic influences? So we mentioned last week that Rav Chaskel Yanover, a mashpia, one of the speakers in the community in which Rav Kook grew up, would give Hasidic discourses, and Rav Kook would imbibe those teachings. He took them in, and it changed him. He was very interested at a very young age, and became very connected to Divrei Hasidut. That's Chabad Hasidus. That's what he was getting a background in. And then, in 1904, when he moved to Israel and became the chief rabbi of Yafo, so there's a man named Rav Avram ben Nachman, who would come and visit Yafo. And he came and introduced the teachings of Rabbi Nachman to Rav Kook. Rabbi Nachman of Breslov also was known as the great psychologist of Torah. He was a great mystic, great Hasidic master. Rav Kook delved into his writings at that point. And there's a famous story that I heard from many people, and I asked my father-in-law if it's true. And if I remember correctly, he said it might be true. So in fact, some of Rav Kook's students came to him and said, with all due respect, Rabbi, we find a striking similarity between the teachings of Rabbi Nachman and your teachings. And he looks up with fiery eyes and says, Ich bin Rabbi Nachman. I am Rabbi Nachman. And then he walks away. I don't really know what to do with that story, but we wouldn't put it past Rav Kook. That's the type of person Rav Kook was, and he definitely, there are striking similarities between his thought and also Rabbi Nachman's. Another influence that he had was the Sfas Emes. When Rav Kook actually got stuck, he went to an Aguda conference. He left Israel and got stuck outside of Israel. He ended up being a rabbi in Switzerland for a little bit, a rabbi in congregation Machzike Hadas in England. And when he was stuck outside of Eretz Yisrael for a time, so that's actually when he wrote his magnum opus, Arot. Which you could find, my father-in-law translated the book Arot, put out by Magid Publications, and we're going to be learning some of his teachings from Arot. And Rav Kook, it's then that he encountered the Sfas Emes, and later on, when Rav Avram Mordechai Alter of Ger, who was a descendant of the Sfas Emes, he came to visit Rav Kook when he came. He was part of an attempt to make peace between the old yeshuv and the new yeshuv, between some of the Yerushalmi rabbis who were more of the Haredi, Haredi persuasion, and some of the newer thinkers and innovators and pioneers in Israel, and they were trying to make peace. And this rabbi came, and Rav Kook started quoting pieces of the Sfas Emes to him verbatim. And at that point, of his ancestor, and he said, wow, this rabbi, I don't know who this rabbi is, but he knows more about my grandfather, my spirit, my grandfather than I do, and he knows more of his Torah than I do. And that's just one Hasidic commentary that Rav Kook was familiar with. Rav Kook was very well-versed in the Maharal. He was also a great mystic and Jewish philosopher of the 16th century. And that's some of the context in which we can see his Kabbalistic writings and his deep understanding of Kabbalah. With that, we're going to delve into a very important topic. On a personal note, this Torah literally changed my life. This Torah really changed my understanding of Hashem, of myself. It has empowered me and students of mine and Rebbeim of mine and has basically informed the way I see Torah and I see Avodas Hashem. So that's a Rav Kook is going to sell himself. You can take it or leave it, but it's very powerful. You are going to see very controversial ideas tonight. But I don't believe they're too controversial. I think they're just, going to the heart of what we need in this generation. As people said, Rav Kook was beyond he was ahead of his generation. He said things that we only now are drawing from and realizing, wow, we need this deeply. So let's do it. So Rav Kook is talking, again, he's talking in the late 19th century. He's dealing with the sociocultural climate of there's the Enlightenment, there's atheism being rampant, there's new thinkers that he's being introduced to. He moves to Yafo and becomes acquainted with and even good friends with some of the great modern Israeli writers and poets. And he has a tremendous respect for them. They have respect for him, which some people like couldn't really understand. Who is this rabbi with payas and a big hat and a beard who can connect to people who identify as atheists, people identify as removed from religion and Torah, and yet they befriended each other. And not only that, Rav Kook had a deep respect for them. So the question is, what is his respect that he has for them? What is it all about? So that's one question we're going to address. Another question is, how do you deal with people's challenges with Hashem? You have students, young kids, older kids, adults. I actually just recently spoke to a friend of mine who said I told him that my sons were singing a song, very cute, singing a song with a very Yiddish accent. Vafilu Bastara, Ilana, you heard them sing this? Shebesoicha Astara, Bevadai Gamsham Nimtza Hashem Yisbarach. Even in the concealment within concealment, Hashem is definitely found there. So a friend of mine says, Darren, with all due respect, that doesn't empower me. That makes me feel very distant from God. We talked about this, right? That makes me feel distant from God. Because if God is there in the concealment within concealment, and he's just watching and laughing or watching and seeing everything evolve, pain, such pain that people have in this world, and yet he's okay with it, that's a very painful understanding of God. And Rav Kook heard such people share such things. How do you deal with those experiences that we have? How do you deal with those thoughts and feelings? How do we deal with students and friends who have questions about God? So we want to address that as well. Also, what's just a minor detail, minor question? What's the purpose of creation? For what purpose? We don't know why Hashem created the world because we can't really touch His ratzon. Allah birtzono, says the Kabbalah that Hashem's ratzon came up. We don't know what His ratzon is. We can't wrap our minds around that idea of ratzon. But for what purpose? Can we figure out a purpose for which Hashem created the world? We're going to touch upon that too. What are some of the most basic ideas in Judaism, in Torah? Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad. What does that mean? I say it every day. It's one of the most important mitzvos. The Talmud opens with this question of when you say Shema. What is the mitzvah of Shema? We're going to hopefully deal with that as well and bring it all together. We're going to start we're going to continue with the words of a late social critic and comedian, George Carlin, Alav Hashalom. And this is a piece that my Rebbe shared with me. I don't recommend you watch it on YouTube. There's a lot of profanity, I was told. And it has millions and millions and millions of views. And this is what George Carlin had to say about religion. When it comes to and I don't feel comfortable saying this, but when it comes to BS, big time major league BS, you have to stand in awe of the all-time champion of false promises and exaggerated claims. Religion. No contest, no contest, religion. Religion easily has the greatest BS story ever told. Think about it. Religion has actually convinced people that there's an invisible man living in the sky who watches everything you do every minute of the day. And the invisible man has a special list of 10 things he doesn't want you to do. And if you do any of these 10 things, he has a special place full of fire and smoke and burning and torture and anguish where he will send you to live and suffer and burn and choke and scream forever and cry forever and ever till the end of time. But he loves you. He loves you and he needs money. He always needs money. He's all powerful, all perfect, all knowing and all wise. Somehow just can't handle money. Religion takes in billions of dollars. They pay no taxes and they always need a little more. Now you can talk about a good story. And he continues. Although George Carlin is being there's some hyperbole here, there's some intense stuff here, but he's making a good point. A lot of people's experience with God is one of an intense relationship, a relationship fraught with fear, fraught with pain, fraught with anxiety. And what does someone do when they experience that? Do you run away from God? Do you believe in that God? How do you relate to that experience? And George Carlin is basically saying, I became an atheist. This is not really so appealing. So I'm gonna fold. I'm gonna leave this to someone else. And in fact, there's a book also that a Rebbe of mine called to my attention. It's called by Shalom Auslander, and he basically says in this book that if you were to replace the name God with Jerry, would sound like a pretty cruel and pretty tyrannical individual. Again, it's a controversial idea. I have trouble even saying it, but it would be, you wouldn't like Jerry too much. You'd want to stay far away from him. So Shalom Auslander, who grew up Frum, said, this is also not for me. And in fact, he says, I'm so Frum, I can't get away. I'm scared for the rest of my life. And he wears actually a necklace with the word Acher. He's alluding to Elisha ben Avuya, who was one of the four people who the Gemara in Chagiga says he went into Pardes. And while Rabbi Akiva came out unscathed, Rav Elisha ben Avuya was done. He no longer believed in MS. And that's what this man wears. He wears the necklace which says Acher. So what do we do with George Carlin? So if you look at, we're going to jump into Rav Kook now. This is a piece from the beginning, from Orot, from again his magnum opus. And Rav Kook is actually going to make us feel a little bit more comfortable with what we just heard. And he's going to validate George Carlin on a certain level. So get ready. Buckle your seatbelts. Page 1. Et ha-matzor ha-yoter gadol beruach ha-adam. Bevo lichlal dat, mevi masha machshava elokit hikvua b'tzura miyuchedet v'yuda etzol yedua etzol b'nei adam ipnei hergel v'adimyon hayalduti. So I label this katnut hamochin, which means small-mindedness, when pediatrics become idol worship. So what is he saying? Rav Kook says the greatest impairment for in the spirit of man is when this idea, the underlined words, shamachshava elokit, the idea, the divine idea, kvua betzura miyuchedet v'yudua etzol b'nei adam. It's basically known in a certain particular way to people. Mipnei hergel v'adimyon hayalduti, because you're so accustomed to it, it's so habitualized, and it becomes infantilized. You have an infantilized understanding of God. Now, another Rebbe of mine told me about the Alter of Slobodka, who once said, he wrote a letter to his child and said, I think it was for his maybe 18th birthday or something like that. He wrote a letter, gave it to him when he was very young, and said, "Open it on your 18th birthday." And he said, "I wish I could have not taught you any chumash, no chumash until you were much older. But unfortunately, I had to give you a Jewish education. And why am I saying this? Because I wish you would be able to look at chumash with adult lenses. And I know that if you have a yeshiva education for so many years, and then you open up a chumash when you're 18 years old, you might be stuck in your pediatric understanding of chumash. But my bracha to you, now that you have a Jewish education, you have seen Chumash already, is that you now look at Chumash with a new lens. So Rav Kook is saying, we're stuck in our understanding of God. We have trouble looking at it, looking at Hashem with a new lens, through a new prism. L'ragle hamaniyah, second paragraph, haklalit sha'alimud haruchani b'inyanim ha'elokim, holech musag ha'elokut v'nechshach. So basically, at a certain point, because people aren't learning about these ideas and aren't taking them seriously on a deeper level when they're older, so the divine ideas become all clouded and all darkened. And the chevan shenekudat hatavach shal akara elokit amumah, he, since it's all clouded, hare amahuta elokit klula bahamon, the gam beyechidim shehem reuyim liyot lemeirei derech lahem. So the general understanding of God, based on according to the masses, the gam beyechidim, and even the individuals who are supposed to be leading the people, leading the Jewish people, rabbis, teachers, educators, what are they? Where are they? Rak betor, how do they understand God? Rak betor koach takif, they understand God as a tyrant, a powerful tyrant. She'ein li malet mimenu, you can't run away. You can't run away from him. The hechrechu li shtaber elav. And you have no choice but to subjugate yourself to him, to work for him, to do for him. You have no choice. You're stuck. And that's it. And that is what people, that's basically what Rav Kook is saying as far as the general state of affairs with respect to understanding of God. And now we continue. Kishabayim, in the third paragraph, Kishabayim lishtabed lavodat elokim al pi hamatzav harekan hazeh. So when we understand God and subjugate ourselves to him with this empty understanding, shalatziur ha'ofel amaleh tohu vavo shemitave berayon kishachoshvim al dvar elokim belo askala velo torah. When you're not really applying yourself and dedicating yourself to an understanding based on thinking and based on Torah, yira tata hanetuka mimekora shu yira ila. So he uses these terms. A good parallel would be the Mesilat Yesharim. The Mesilas Yesharim says that there's something called yira tachet and yira taromimut. Yira tachet is a lower form of fear of God, where you're fearful of sin, you're fearful of what's going to happen if I sin and I mess up, what will Hashem say or do to me? That's one understanding of it, or what's going to happen to me if I sin. And then there's Yiras HaRomimus. Yirat HaRomimut is really the fear which is essentially awe of God, awe of his presence. He's so awesome. How can I do anything wrong in front of the awesome, all-powerful God? So Rav Kook says when the Yira Tata, when the lower fear is disconnected from the higher fear, from its source. Ha'adam holechu ma'abed et zohar olamo. So what happens to you? A person goes and loses the light, loses the brightness, loses the spiritual depth of his life. Ayadei mashu makasher et atzmo lekatnu tamochen. Because he's connecting himself to small-mindedness. And we're not going to read the whole piece. Rav Kook continues. And if you look at the underlined words, Rav Kook continues and says, basically, this crushes someone. This makes someone depressed. It messes with someone's heart and with someone's mind. And it takes away, it squeezes all godliness, all energy and all excitement out of a person when they have this understanding of Hashem. And this is a very powerful line. Last line in this paragraph: the afim yomar kol hayom kulo she emuna zo hi b'Hashem echad hi mila reka she'ein hanashama yodad mimena klum. Even if someone proclaims forth Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem echad every day, it basically is they're empty words that the neshama doesn't know anything about. It's empty. It's meaningless, says Rav Kook. And now Rav Kook says something quite controversial. Again, these are some pieces that people didn't like too much that he said. So let's continue in the last line of the first page. V'akfira ba ke'ein tza'aka. Basically, kfira comes and it's a painful cry to redeem mankind from this narrow alien pit, to raise it from the darkness of of text and speech to the light of thoughts and emotions. You can't, the more you try to articulate God's existence God's nature, the more you lose your connection to God and your understanding of God. It has to be relegated to deeper thoughts, emotions, and to a mindfulness and a connection of God in the moment. And he says, eventually people go and they place their focus on morality. They go, they turn to Musar. They say, okay, there's no God, but I'm going to be a moral person. That's what I'm going to do with my life. Yesh l'kfira schut hakiyum ha'arai. So kfira has a temporary value and a temporary place. Mimnei shehi tzricha la'akel et hazuhama shenitdabka be'emunah me'efes dat v'avoda. So basically it comes and it cleans off all the shmutz, all the dirt that has been attached to emunah. And hopefully it will lead to a deeper understanding of emunah, and that's the role that kfira plays, that heresy plays. And we'll look at another piece on the same note, and then I'd love to hear thoughts, comments, questions. When atheism is holy. So says Rav Kook in Orot HaEmunah, Yesh kfira, there's a famous piece, Yesh kfira shehi kahoda, v'hoda shehi kfira. There is heresy that's tantamount to faith and admission of God, and then there's admission or acknowledgement of God that's tantamount to heresy. Ketzad, how is that? Moda adam sha Torah hi min hashamayim. So a person can admit that Torah is from heaven. Aval otam hashamayim mitzdarim etzlo betzurot kol kach meshunot. So, but the shamayim that he believes in, the heavens that he believes in, he pictures a place of heaven where you can't help but think about some of those of the Islam orientation, of the Muslim orientation, who think that there's something waiting for them in heaven when they get there. They've done good things. They've, God forbid, killed people, and now they can go to a special heaven. So if you think like that, and even if you think that a heaven is a physical place with fun and games and enjoyment, so says Rav Kook, if you understand heaven in such strange ways, ad shaloni sharba min ha'amuna amitit me'uma, and there's no more truth of faith left, so that is belief that's tantamount to heresy. The kfira, second paragraph, the kfira shehi kahoda'a ketzad, what about heresy that's tantamount to belief or faith? Kofer adam et Torah min ha'shamayim, a person could deny that Torah was given by God. Aval kfirato miyusedet Rakal ota klita shekalat minat siur shel tzurat hashamayim asher b'mocho tamleim machshavot hevavato. They might understand. They might have been brought up with a very infantile understanding of Hashem and heaven and all sorts of deep ideas, and these were misconstrued and mistaught. And they said, if this is what God is, if this is what heaven is, it's so simple. It's so it just doesn't make sense, and therefore I don't believe in it. I don't believe in Torah from God. I don't believe in any of it. Who Omer Hatorah Yesh La Makor Yoterna Lamize? The Torah, it can't be. So says Rav Kook in the last underlined lines in that paragraph. Afal Pisha Adain Lohi Gia Bazel Merkaza Emet. Even though the heretic didn't get to the place of truth, Mikol Makom Kfira Kazo Kahoda Hi Chashuva. So, nonetheless, this kfira is like an important admission or concession. So it's basically on the way, on the path to true emunah, and that's the beauty of a heretic, of the contribution of a heretic. The last line, I'm just going to read in English, in this paragraph. For what we're truly dealing with is the difference between what people say with their mouths, and what they actually mean inside, and the latter is what truly matters. So you could say, I believe in God, you could say, I believe in this and that, but if it's not really accurate, and if you don't really feel it, you don't really connect, and you're not in touch with the true MS, so then it doesn't mean much, says Rav Kook. We're going to take a moment for questions, comments, thoughts. Allie.
Okay, so this is two parts, but it's probably related. I'm curious, from a developmental perspective, what Rav Kook's thoughts were about, A, how you begin to teach children, because the ideas there are so abstract that I'm just curious how, what do you consider the right way to begin to educate children? And B, the second piece is that there are individuals that don't ever really pass through a certain developmental level of being able to think so abstractly and really stay in a very concrete mode of thinking for their entire lives. So how do they access this true idea of Hashem?
So Dr. Ali Mandel is our school psychologist at Nativot. We talk about, so of course, you're asking from a developmental standpoint, right? We talk about this a lot. We also talk about how to introduce the Torahs of Rav Kook to kids at times. And so that question we'll deal with on page 5, if we behave and move through the sources, if I behave and move through the sources at a good pace. Rav Kook is going to deal with that in that piece on page 5. How do you get to these ideas? What's the trajectory? What's the scope and sequence as far as how to get to these ideas? And what happens if you don't move past a more basic understanding? So that's a very important question, because right now it doesn't sound too promising for someone who is stuck in a limited perspective of God. Anyone else? Comments? Questions? Yeah, Shoshana.
I just want to ask the person who's referring to in the second paragraph, the 8th paragraph. So he's saying that this person really does have a feeling for God. It's just that whatever this person has learned about Torah hasn't really been authentic, basically. So the person says he doesn't believe in God, but really he doesn't. He's striving to find that because what he's been taught has not satisfied his actual true belief in God. Like he's searching, is that what he's saying? He's searching for God, but he hasn't been given the tools.
Yes, I think so. I think it could manifest itself in the form of an atheist, an agnostic, someone who identifies as one of these things, or identifies as someone who believes in a higher power or believes in God, doesn't know what that means exactly. And Rav Kook actually definitely addresses that at length. And the Kutzker, the Kutzker Rebbe, a great Hasidic master, was known to say. He said, "You know that God that the atheists don't believe in? I don't believe in that God either. But they might." But they might believe in something that's true and that's close to what I believe in. So I think he's definitely alluding to that. Yeah, that there are those who they might still believe in God for sure. And they haven't. I think that was a good way of putting it. They haven't been given the tools to articulate it, to understand it, to conceptualize it for themselves. Anyone else? It's too quiet. This side's too quiet.
Trying to see where you're driving here.
Okay, so let's go. Let's continue. So it's not me. It's Rav Kook. I don't take any responsibility. okay, so and as we said last year, if we left off now, we'd be in trouble. Okay, so the piece C on page 2 on the bottom. Ha'osher ha'loki ha'kolel. So, says Rav Kook, there is an issue. We'll introduce this piece with a quote from Nietzsche that I believe Rav Kook used himself. Rav Kook, I believe, said, either explicitly or implicitly, he addressed Nietzsche. He was well-read in the philosophers of his time. He would quote directly, indirectly, Schopenhauer and Nietzsche and all sorts of philosophers and thinkers, Hegel. And he said, this is on page 7 at the bottom, "If there were gods, how could I bear to be no god? Consequently, there are no gods. If there were gods, how could I bear to be no god? Consequently, there are no gods." So we're going to juxtapose this quote with this piece from Rav Kook coming up. So says Rav Kook, "Yesh yetzer hara, nistar me'od b'mamakei ha'nefesh." There's an inclination that's hidden, that's subsumed in the depths of a person's soul. Kina merakevet atzamot. It rots bones. Hamevia rifya rifyon u'machshachim l'chol rayon shalora. Basically, it brings weakness and darkness. It's dormant in the b'machboei ha'nefesh, in the inner chambers of the human soul. And sometimes it comes out in different ways. Hakina hamuzara hazot hi kakina belukim. What is this? This is jealousy. This is a jealousy of God, of being jealous of God. Ha'adam mekanehu ba'alukim al oshro ha'ein sofi. He's jealous of God's all perfect, endless happiness. Al shlemuto hamuchletet, his perfection. A person's jealous of that. Now, some people could very much relate to what Rav Kook is saying. Some people have no idea what he's saying. What do you mean, jealous of God? So says Rav Kook, basically, and my understanding of Rav Kook, we're not going to continue in the whole piece, is that Rav Kook is saying that if you have a God that, and this is how a Rebbe of mine taught me, if you have a God that is, and we're Chas V'Shalom, we wouldn't be drawing a God or representing God on a paper, with ink, but if you have a God who is this, and you are this. See that? You can't see it. That was the goal. And you are looking to God as the all-powerful, all-knowing, ultimate being who is in charge and tells you what to do. And I, no matter what, no matter how hard I try, I could be good, I can grow, I can conquer my evil inclination, but it's not enough because I will never get there. And I will never feel good enough. And that Rav Kook says, is a kina ba'alukim. It's a certain jealousy of God. It's a feeling that I can't, no matter what, I can't get even near God. If Hashem is infinite and I'm infinitesimal, it's not gonna get me anywhere. My life is doomed to meaninglessness and to nothingness. And so says Rav Kook. So where are we going? The question was asked, where is this going? So says Rav Kook, in the bold words at the end of the first paragraph, Ein Marpela Machalazo ki im hara el yonashel dat elokim beberur ubeomek higayon. There's no solution or remedy to this disease except for a great supernal enlightenment of the knowledge of God in clarity and in depth of logic. That's what we need. And what's the bottom line? So he's going to tell us in a moment what the bottom line is. But first, to understand where Rav Kook is coming from, we're going to go to another piece and we'll get back to this piece in a moment. So Rav Kook is going to start bemoaning the fact that all of the rabbis of his time, all of the leaders, all of the great scholars are all pointing or all directing all their energies to practical Torah. And to a simple Torah, not to undermine halacha or gemara or anything like that, but he says everyone's devoting their energy to that, and yet there are people who are starving and thirsty for knowledge of God, for knowledge of avodas Hashem. It's reminiscent of the hakdama of the Mesilas Yesharim, the introduction to Mesilas Yesharim, where the Ramchal says that you have all these very smart, brilliant people who are Torah scholars, and they don't pay attention to the deeper elements of avoda, of God's service, of how to become a better person, closer to God, closer to understanding deep ideas and avodas Hashem and Hashem. And then there are people who are very pious, but not so smart, not so able, and they're the ones who are devoting themselves to God. And we need both. We need everyone to devote themselves to God and to devote themselves to avodas Hashem, to understanding of Hashem. So Rav Kook is going to say that in a moment. So we're going to see from Igros HaReiyah, Igrot HaReiyah are the letters of Rav Kook that were printed. And this, now we're on source 3, page 3 at the bottom. Roman numeral 2a, when the essence of all of it is forgotten. So he says, Lolam lo nuchal italem matrufa haklalit hakolelet et hakol. We can't hide from the all-encompassing remedy that includes it all. V'sha'azivata hi shegarma lanu et nefilatenu. And leaving it is what has caused our downfall. And he says, Azavnu et nishmat haTorah. We left the soul of Torah. We are bereft of the soul of Torah. We only focus on the guf of Torah. And he continues, and basically says we have to focus on the underlying words, HaKodshi HaHofai, the manifestation of holiness, Shebo HaGe'ula VaYeshua Gnuza, the redemption and the salvation is subsumed or is hiding in that. And that's what we left. And he continues to say, he says, if you go out in the street and you say, we need to learn this Torah, they'll call you crazy. They'll say, you're nuts. Just learn Gemara, learn Halacha. I actually asked a question that I had a lot of interest in, and I was really trying to grow when I was in my early 20s, and a rabbi just said, learn Shulchan Aruch. Don't ask these questions. And for me, that was a very painful thing to experience. Rav Kook says, we need something more. We need something deeper. And he says, what does that mean to do? What does that mean? We need something more and deeper. What should we deal with? La'asok b'taratam shemusagei ha'amuna v'avoda. We should be talking about amuna, about faith and service. B'biruran shel hadeos b'inyanei halakus, knowledge of God, hanavua, prophecy, ruach hakodesh, hageula v'atzipia l'tshua, tshua sa'uma v'tshua sa'olam, the redemption and salvation of the world and of our nation, tikune hanashamos, repairing the souls, and all these deep ideas. So that's where Rav Kook is coming from. He's saying we got to be dealing with these things now. It's imperative. Next source, in the interest of time, we're just going to point out one or two things. B, the time has come. This is a piece from Oros HaKodesh, the Sefer that Rav David Cohen, the Nazir, edited. For those of you who weren't here with us last week, so Rav Kook has the Shmona Kfatzim, 8 journals that were uncensored, unedited, that were put out, that were printed about 20 years ago. Before that, all we had was Oros HaKodesh, which basically Rav Kook said to the Nazir, to Rav David Cohen, here's my writings, please figure something out, print them, you know, figure a way to put it all together. And he edited, he spent years, day after day, editing the letters, the writings of Rav Kook. So this is from that Sefer Oros HaKodesh. There's obviously a lot of overlap because Oros HaKodesh comes from the journals. But you can see the journals themselves, the uncensored words of Rav Kook. So here he says, basically, I'll read in English in the interest of time. When an individual person, and so to a generation, arrives at a status whose spiritual appearance is already summoned to actualization, it's impossible for the person to sate his vital thirst with any type of limited content. It has to be a content which transfers the person into a more expansive spiritual state in which he will feel the great elation which comes from the planting of his soul in its source of life. Due to this, the secrets of the world, the secrets of Torah, the secrets of Hashem are increasingly demanded from this generation. And in fact, I think if we look around, there's more and more writings on the idea of Kabbalah and mysticism. It's coming from secular people. It's coming from non-Jewish people. It's all over. It's rampant to the point where now many rabbis who said that they were very reluctant to teach Kabbalah in our day, they started teaching it because there's such a thirst. And if we can't get it from the wrong, if it's only received from the wrong place, we might as well offer it from the right place. So that's again what Cook is saying in the early 20th century. And this is what we have to do, he says. So now, back to our piece on page 3. Rav Kook says, how do you remove the jealousy? This is page 3, the bottom of the first source. How do you get rid of this jealousy of God, this kinah b'elokim? So he says there's 2 paths. This is the middle line. Hanetivot. Hamiyuchadot biyichud la'asarat hanega shel kinah zot. There are 2 paths. Ha'achad hi netiva madait tehorah. There's the path of pure awareness. V'ashniya madait musarit. The path of ethical awareness. So hanetiva hamadait, the pure awareness path, mevareret shehevdel bein elokim va'olam talui hu rak b'deah v'asaga ve'orchot hachaim. Basically, the difference between God and the world, or Elohim and the world, is a function of a person's thoughts and understandings and perceptions. Ko masha dea mitale, the more that the dea, that the thoughts and opinions and understandings are rise, mitkarev ha'adam ha'olam legodel ha'loki, he understands the greatness of God. Ve uveromemuso ha'lyona shel ha'adam, in his exaltedness, v'akaraso agmura, and his great understanding, motze husha kol hu kalul belokim, he realizes everything is included within God. And we'll see what that means very soon. V'atzmiyut ha'pratit shel kol prat mi pratei ha'avaya, and every single individual and particular existence in all of existence. Einenokim hitgalut elokut. Every individual existence is just merely a manifestation, an expression, a revelation of God's oneness. Hazorachat bigvanim shonim lefanenu, which all they're shining forth in all different shades and in front of us. So lefize kol haosher eloki halohu osher shel hakol. Really, any divine happiness is the happiness and the joy of the all, of everyone, of every single individual, of the whole entire world in its entirety. What does that mean? So let's go to a piece that we started exploring in a very short time last week. This is page 5, and Ali, we're going to get back to your questions now. B. So so I entitled the shiur Rav Kook a monotheist, ? So part of my goal, obviously, was to be a little controversial, confuse people. But part of the goal is to reflect what we're going to be talking about. So Rav Kook says that Rav Kook is going to talk about the following. Monotheism, how would someone translate monotheism? Belief in one God. Okay. So mano is one, theism is God, is understanding of God. So one God. And monotheism, the belief in one God, typically is understood as there is one God and there are not two gods. Lo yelecha Elohim acherim al panai, the second of the Aseres HaDibros of the Ten Commandments, is don't have other gods upon you. You shouldn't understand that there's any other force in the world that has a separate, independent existence that has power and authority over you or over anything in the world. But Rav Kook is going to say monotheism, that means there's one God and not two. But according to the Mekubalim, and the Sefer Yetzirah says this very clearly, he says, before, there's one, there's two, but what's before the one? What does it mean? What is before the one? Before the one, how do you count that? And the Mekubalim explained that really, instead of saying that there is one God, really God is one. There's a mitzvah of Yichud Hashem, and Yichud Hashem means the unity of God. What does that mean? What does it mean that God is one?
That was Rambam before Mekubalim.
So the Rambam
before Mekubalim.
Well, it depends how
the concept of this absolute unity is Rambam.
So it depends if you believe in it depends when the Zohar was written. If you believe that Rav Shimon bar Yochai wrote the Zohar, so that's one thing. If you believe in the scholars that 13th century, but the Rambam speaks about the unity of God. There are a lot of intellectual academic papers that deal with. I think Rabbi Dr. Alan Brill speaks about these concepts. Lawrence J. Kaplan, I think, wrote an. There are articles out there talking about the Rambam and whether or not his understanding of God is similar to the Mekubalim or different. Some people say that the Rambam eventually came around to Kabbalah. Others say that's ludicrous. But either way, so the Rambam at the beginning of Hilchos Yisodei HaTorah speaks about these ideas of the unity of God. And it's many say that his understandings are based on Aristotelian philosophy, but that's another shir and another topic. So there's something called monotheism, one God. So says Rav Kook on page 5, Teva hadavar, hu sheba shkafa haragila, ota hait bonanut halokit haba meadea hamanotiistit, monotheism, she ashkafa yoter mefursemet gam mitzad ha'emunah. So this is the famous understanding of God, monotheism. It's what so many religions, so many peoples understand God to be, one God. Shehi hi mesavevet lifamim etzev achelishut nefesh. It brings about sadness and weakness of heart. Mibnei harifyon haba beruach ha'adam b'tziuro, shehu betor nimtza mesuvav, mesovev mugbal, so like we said, it leaves you far away from God. It leaves you infinitesimal when he's infinite. And it could be very painful. Says Rav Kook, Pachot, next paragraph, Pachot ma'ashkafa hazot, mi'agat et ha'adam ha'ashkafa ha'manotiistit, hanotel la'asparah ha'pantiistit. So there's a different understanding, which is less debilitating, which is monotheism, which leans towards pantheism. So, in the original, in Rav Kook's journal, he didn't say pantheism, he said Spinoza. He quoted Benedict Spinoza, who was known as a pantheist, known as a, he didn't believe in the God that we believe in. But Rav Kook was said there are redeeming qualities to this idea. So what is pantheism? Pantheism means all is God. Pan, all, theism, God. All is God and God is all. So if you took away from the world, if you took away something, you're taking away part of God. God is all is God, and that's it. That's what Rav Kook is saying. Let's take monotheism and let's couple it with pantheism. And what do we get? So he didn't use this word, but Rav David Cohen, his student, used this word. So what do we get? The true understanding of God. We're not, Rav Kook is saying, I'm not truly a monotheist in the typical sense. I'm a panentheist. Panentheism is all is in God. All is in Hashem. Panentheism. So really, really this is the understanding of Hashem that Rav Kook is espousing. And we're going to get there in a minute. So Rav Kook says, Kishihi mizdakechet misigeha hamuvletet bechalakim rabim mimena bechlek hitboni hatfuni התפוני של החסידות החדשה, שאין אין שום דבר מבלעדי הלוקות. So he's saying, basically, if you purify the idea of pantheism, and you take this idea, really with this new perspective, he says this new Hasidic perspective, this is really that there's nothing except God. And when we say ein ol milvado means all. God is everything. There's nothing outside of God. There are stories of Rav Chaim Brisker, you know, very good these stories, Rav Malitsky. The Brisker Rav, that he was running from the Nazis, and he said, Einol Milvado, Einol Milvado, Einol Milvado, and that just, took care of everything. What is it, Steve?
Yeah, the sun.
Yeah. So he basically, there are many stories, but the Brisker Rav was one of the famous examples where someone would say, Eino Mavado, and that's it. Things would just move around based on that idea. And really what it's about is consciousness. When you're conscious, and Rav Kook is going to say this, when you're conscious of the fact that Eino Mavado, that means that that there's nothing else. That means that any illusion that I have any independent existence, that I am removed from God, separate from God, that there's a threat, that someone who can get me, someone who can kill me or attack me, that they have independent power. If I strip myself of that delusion and I remind myself that Eino Mavado, Hashem is everything. Hashem is running the world. There's no independent existence outside of Him. So then I'm one with Hashem, and then I can change. I can. You know, change worlds. Tzaddik Gozer and Hashem Mekayim. So Tzaddik is Gozer. He says, this is what should be. He's aligning himself with the will of Hashem, and really there's no other will other than Hashem's will, and then things change accordingly. More complicated than that, yes. But I'm not recommending you try that.
It's also more complicated than that because it's the issue of free will. When you go back to Rambam, where a lot of our cooked stuff comes from, the issue of your place in this world through things. So you have to bring that complexity into all of God.
Yes. So Rav Kook said, and we're running out of time, unfortunately, but Rav Kook basically said, Rav Kook used this understanding of God to solve, I think, almost every deep philosophical and theological question. He said, how can you have... the Leshem, for example, the Leshem who he studied with years before, he says, "B'makom sheyesh yediyah, ein bechira." When there's in the place, in the sphere where there's divine foreknowledge, there's no bechira, there's no free will. In the space or the sphere where there's bechira, where there's free will, there's no yediyah, there's no divine foreknowledge. That's how the Leshem articulates it. The way Rav Kook, from my understanding, the way he articulates it is, we have free will, and yet Hashem has divine foreknowledge. And that's a paradox. And in our dualistic minds, in our simple logical minds, that can't make sense. That those don't shtim. They don't coexist properly. But in Hashem, but from mitzido, from Hashem's perspective, that's fine. That makes sense.
It can work with
Etzbe Elokim. Right. Okay.
If you have your free will, then it's Etzbe Elokim. That can work. That's not contradictory.
So everyone tries to explain this paradox. This is what Rav Kook says. It works. How does it work exactly? So again, he can't explain that. But one piece of this is that Hashem is, we explained last week, Hashem created the world, and Hashem constricted himself. And according to the Ramchal's understanding and the Hasidic understanding of this tzimtzum, of this constriction, he created a chalal hapanui, a space vacant of Hashem's presence. And really, it wasn't vacant. The fact that it was vacant, it wasn't vacant because Hashem, he sent in a kav, a line, a ray of Hashem's light, and the light surrounded the vacuum, but it also permeated the vacuum. It's paradoxical. Hashem didn't actually remove his presence. How could he remove his presence if his Orein Sof, if the whole world is just Hashem's oneness? But paradoxically, he made a space for us. And in the words of my Rebbe would say, you see this in a relationship in love. When you see two people, you see a husband and wife, let's say, as an example, you see two people coming together and being one while remaining separate. They are creating a space for each other while paradoxically becoming one. And if a relationship is properly developed, that's the coexistence of 1 + 1 = 1, where it doesn't make sense in Aristotelian logic, but in paradoxical logic, 1 + 1 could = 1, where two people come to be one while remaining separate, remaining individuals. Hashem created the world; He is one. There's nothing outside of Him. Ein leis atar panui mine, as the Kabbalah says, and yet still, despite the fact that He is one and His oneness permeates all of existence, He still created a person with their own independent reality, and that person can choose, and that person can make choices, and He doesn't change things. We don't decide what happens. All we do by making free will choices is we're cultivating consciousness. We're allowing Hashem's. This is how Hashem actually. Mark, you speaking about the Rambam. This is how Rav Kook understands the Rambam. That Rav Kook that the knowledge of God, Hashem Hayadua Hayodea Hayadua and Hadea, I believe the Rambam says. God is the knower. He's the Yodea. He is the Dea. He's the knowledge. He's the Yadua. He's the known. What does that mean? Hashem actually he's the thinker, because he conceives of us. So, for example, let me take an example that a Rebbe of mine shared. Let's say right now, everyone, you closed your eyes. You thought of a person in your mind. Let's say I'm thinking of a person named Jeremy. Okay, I just create Jeremy now exists. Now, if Jeremy were to be able to talk, Jeremy would say, "Oh, in my great creator Darren, and you know, the great creator gave me life. He's a great person. I hope he continues to give me life." That's what Jeremy is saying. Jeremy has another friend because I just thought of another friend named Morris, and Jeremy's talking to Morris. Now, do Jeremy and Morris, do they exist? They exist in my thinking. In my mind. They are a thought in the mind of the thinker. Do they have independent existence? So as soon as I strip myself of Jeremy and Morris, they're gone. The difference between us and between Jeremy and Morris is that we actually, paradoxically, we do exist. We are in God. We are in the thought of God. That's what the Rav Kook explains in the Rambam. We exist in His thought. And through our consciousness of Hashem's presence in the world, through mitzvot, through bechira, through free will choices, we actually bring consciousness, a self-consciousness of God, into the world. I don't know if that makes sense. We're trying to pack a lot of things into one short shiur. I'm probably already over time. So that's the idea of, I'm going to hold you hostage, hopefully, for 2 more minutes. I'm not going to ask for the thumbs up. I'm just going to do it. That's the idea. So what does it mean when we say Shema Yisrael Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad? So when we say Hashem, Hashem is the one, the one who is, was, and will always be. He's the ultimate Beer. He transcends existence. Elokeinu, Elokim, means Baal HaKochos Kulam. He's the source of all power in this world. Hashem, Elokim. Elokim is here. It used to be that there was a taiva to be Ovid of Avodah Zarah. Why? During the time of prophecy, during the time of Nevuah, you would see the divine energy present in this world, and you'd say, "Oh my gosh, that tree is so much full of life. I want to serve it because that tree looks like it has divine energy." and says, and that's what Elohim means. Elohim is Bala Kochos Kulam. Hashem has infused the world with his presence, with his divine energy. We don't see it as much as we used to, but it's present. It's here. That's Elohim. And in fact, the Chacham Tzvi pointed out that Hateva is the gematria of Elohim. Elohim and Hateva, the nature, and Elohim are the same gematria. So Shema Yisrael, when I say Shema Yisrael, I'm thinking Hashem, you're also the one who's, you the transcendent, are also immanent. You're here, you're with me, you're with us. I have an Hashama, I'm a Chelek Elokam Mimal, I'm part of God, I'm connected to Him, and I'm nothing without Him. But I'm everything with Him, because if I'm charged into the, if I put my plug into the outlet that's connected to all of oneness and all of existence, so then I'm part of that. And that's extremely empowering. And if I make a positive choice in my free will and I bring more consciousness of God into the world, then I've done an amazing, amazing thing that no one else can do. Shema Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu, Hashem Echad, Hashem is one. There's not one God, but God is one. God includes everything. He's beyond everything as well. We can't fully understand that. We have limited minds, but our goal is to ultimately think that and connect to Hashem and think about His presence all the time in our lives, and that's what we're going for, and that's the atheism's contribution, the atheist's contribution to our existence, is that it pushed us to become a little bit more aware of our heritage, a little bit more aware of our Torah, and aware of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and that's ultimately, according to Rav Kook, what we're going for in our lives. And we're not going to go through any more sources. I'll just tell you, if you want to keep your sources, they're very valuable pieces from Rav Kook. So he'll explain this idea a little bit more in the rest of his pieces. And then there are quotes from Albert Einstein and also David Bohm. David Bohm was a quantum physicist, I believe, and a scientist, and he passed away in 1992. He's Jewish, and he said things that, although at some point very early in his life he said he's an agnostic, which fits with Rav Kook's whole idea, he basically says things that sound very similar to these concepts. And ultimately, I don't think he ever got to Avodas Hashem and Shmiras Torah and Mitzvot. But I guess I'll end with a bracha that we all, that those who, the holy atheists should find the deeper, the emes of the world, and that we continue to learn together and to get closer to the true emes, to the true HaKadosh Baruch Hu's oneness, and we can grow in our avoda and our Yir Shamayim. I realize we didn't answer your question fully, but we have time. And thank you for coming and learning with me.